Well, talk about a thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Not only am I broadcasting live from Israel, I'm broadcasting right next to the Sea of Galilee today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, it really does not get much more thoroughly Jewish than this. We were at Mount Carmel, where Elijah called down fire from heaven. We were with underprivileged Israeli kids late in the afternoon. Now we're right literally by the Sea of Galilee. I'm at the Galilee Experience, which has been a Messianic Jewish outreach center since the early 1990s. I'm here with some of the folks from our tour group and one of our grads who serves in Israel, and he came fully prepared with shofar in hand just to come on, let's hear this thing, man. All right. Great. live from Israel, that was the shofar being blown courtesy of Frank Laporta, one of our grads serving here with his wife, Carol, in Haifa. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I've got some Jewish questions from our group here. I've got some points I want to get into, some interesting things to share as well. But when I walked into Galilee Experience, the first thing I saw was a book in Hebrew, and the author's name is Yisrael Roth. When I saw that, that wouldn't mean much to me, but it's actually Sid Roth. When I saw the title, I was wondering. The title is Lachshov Ba'atzmecha, to think for yourself. And then the Hebrew subtitle, Stories of 10 Jews Who Chose to Think for Themselves. This book in Russian has well over a million copies distributed in Russia. I think the English copies are close to a million copies that have been distributed and sent out to Jewish people around the nation and translated into Hebrew. And I've got one of the stories in here. Can I tell you how it happened? We were living in Maryland at that time, and several of us were at offices, all sharing offices in close proximity to each other, different Messianic Jewish ministries. And I was part of a Messianic congregation there and leading a school. And Sid Roth called me one day, and it was as if he had gotten a letter in the mail with instructions. And he said, Mike, I'm to write a book. I'm to edit a book and take 10 stories of Jewish people. He said, I had a dream. And in the dream, this is what I was instructed to do, to compile 10 different stories, a Holocaust survivor, someone that was into, you know, weird New Age stuff, an Israeli that was miraculously healed, my story, and mine came out, Why I Don't Believe in Rabbinic Tradition, and to put them together in a book. And then he was going to put the book out. But he gave me the information literally as if someone had sent him a letter, his boss, you know, that he had a boss, and his boss sent him a letter and said, I want you to do this, 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 this. It was the first dream of that kind that Sid ever had, what we would call a prophetic dream, God giving him a message in the dream. And none of us ever dreamed for sure that that book would have that type of impact, would go around the world that it has with millions in print, touching millions of Jewish lives. So it was neat to come in and see this. We had some interesting discussion, our tour guide today on the bus, talking about Eliezer ben Yehuda, the father of the modern Hebrew language. I want to talk about that, just some important lessons for us as pioneers, the Hebrew word chalutzim, pioneers, and how an individual with a sense of purpose, with a sense of calling, can pull off something that is absolutely, completely impossible in the natural. And yet with God, all things are possible. I want to talk to you a little bit about Mount Carmel and Elijah, some of the things we shared there, and some Jewish-related questions. So if you've got a Jewish-related question of any kind, Israel, Jewish, Hebrew-related, give me a call, 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be right back.
Change the world.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, a blind man standing by the side of the road. He was a blind from birth and was up heavy low. And though he lived a good life, he could not see.
What a man from Galilee.
Larry Norman. Good find there, Matt. Larry Norman singing The Man from Galilee, as we are in what Israelis call Kinneret, and known otherwise as the Sea of Galilee. And we'll have our tour group out on a boat in the Sea of Galilee. And then I guess we go over to River Jordan, right? We're doing baptisms while the catfish nip at our toes in the River Jordan later in the afternoon. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. A question for you out of curiosity. And I wrote an article about this. I'll get into it a bit with you later in the broadcast. But your own opinion, your own understanding. If you're a Muslim listening, I'd love to hear your feedback as well. But when Christianity was guilty of, say, the Inquisitions and torturing heretics, it had to do that by repudiating the example of Jesus and the teachings of Jesus. The only way that the professing church could do things like that or just become a conquering army like the Crusaders and things like that, you'd have to repudiate the example of Jesus and the teaching of Jesus. When Muslims do violent things, when you have Hamas pledged to the destruction of the Jewish people, when you have groups like Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and Boko Haram and Hezbollah and these others, when you have groups like that, or do they have to repudiate Islam to do violent acts, or is what they are doing in harmony with Islam, in keeping with Islam? Is that true to form in Islam and in harmony with the example and the teaching of Muhammad? I posted an article about that. If you just check for latest articles, AskDrBrown.org, check for latest articles, you'll see that. But I posted an article about that explaining why there is no Christian Al-Qaeda. So curious to get your thoughts on that as well. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, so we go up on Mount Carmel today, and it's an amazing sight looking out. It's just an extraordinarily beautiful sight. But that's where there was the great confrontation with Elijah and the false prophets of Baal, or Baal in Hebrew, and the false prophets of Asherah as well. And Elijah calls down fire from heaven, and the people who had been so hard-hearted that, to put it in contemporary terms, when he said, "Are you going to serve God or are you going to serve the devil?" they just stared at him. They wouldn't even answer him a word. When the fire fell, they fell on their faces and said, "Yahweh, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God." But there's an interesting Hebrew phrase. And as I just did a search for this phrase, it told me what I knew already and what I mentioned to the folks on Mount Carmel today. The phrase is found four times in the Hebrew Scriptures. Four times in the Hebrew Scriptures. And it's found first in 1 Kings chapter 17, verse 1, where Elijah appears on the scene out of the blue. Now, what I want to talk to you about for a moment, yes, it's Jewish, yes, it's Hebrew, yes, it's something that took place in Israel, but it has to do with all of our individual spiritual lives. It has to do with our own walk with God. And here's what it says, that Elijah the Tishbite from the inhabitants of Gilead, he says to Ahab, he just appears out of the blue, and he's now speaking to the king. He says, as the Lord lives, as Yahweh lives, the God of Israel, before whom I stand. That phrase, as the Lord lives, before whom I stand, meaning in whose presence I live, at whose service I am. The New Jewish Version says, as the Lord lives, the God of Israel, whom I serve. Complete Jewish Bible, before whom I stand. That's what it means. To stand before him is to be in his service. And then it occurs on the lips of Elijah again in 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 15, as Elijah is about to put his life on the line. And he says, okay, I'm going to appear before Ahab. He tells Obadiah, I'm going to appear before Ahab today. And either God answers by fire or Elijah's dead. What's interesting is the same phrase occurs two more times It occurs on the lips of Elisha, the servant of Elijah, in 2 Kings 3:14, where he says, as the Lord of hosts lives, before whom I stand. And then in 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 16, it appears on his lips again. You say, okay, what is the big deal about that? What's the significance of it? Simply this, that Elijah lived before God. He didn't just get some brainstorm, I'm going to appear before King Ahab, and I'm going to tell him there's not going to be any dew or rain in Israel. No, he heard from God, and this is how he lived. He lived before God. As Leonard Ravenhill said, he hid himself before he showed himself. He hid himself away with God. He got the mind of God, the plan of God, and that he didn't have to speak long messages because he was in the will of God. And when he prayed, God heard him, and there was no rain. God sent him with that message. This was the God whom he served, the God in whose presence he stood. God sent him with that message. And then when he got there to deliver the message, God backed that word. There was no dew or rain except according to his word. Then he calls down fire from heaven, 1 Kings 18. What does he say? Let all Israel know that I did this at your word. This is not my idea, my brainstorm. I did this at your word. I'm your servant. And then what do we see? We see that Elisha is his disciple. And the Hebrew names are very different, Eliyahu and Elisha. So Elisha sits under Elijah and learns from him and now puts these same things in practice, that he too lives before God, that he too lives in the presence of God, that he too doesn't just make up his own plans and decide what he's going to do when he wants to do it, but rather he hears from God. And that's why God backed him so amazingly. You say, yeah, but come on, man, that's Elijah. Mike, give me a break. This is one of the most supernatural guys in the Bible. You ever call? I was on Mount Carmel and called on fire from heaven. We didn't have a confrontation, nor did we try, but I don't think I would have just gotten up there and said, all right, we're going to call down fire from heaven. Or go to the king and say, all right, it's not going to be any dew or rain except according to my word. And look, he's, you know, chariots of fire come down from him, and he's taken up in a whirlwind. And his disciples say, well, maybe the Ruach, maybe the spirit, the wind just picked him up and put him somewhere. That's how supernatural this guy was. And yet, Jacob, James, the fifth chapter, what does it tell us? He was a man just like us. He was a man with feelings and weaknesses just like us. He was a regular human being. Out of everyone in the Bible outside of Jesus, the Son of God, you think about somebody that was different, that was almost like of a different substance. You'd think of somebody like Elijah, and his name Eliyahu means my God is Yahweh, my God is the Lord. But no, he was just a regular human being, but a regular human being who hid himself in God. And that's why he could say, as the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel lives, before whom I stand, in whose presence I live, whom I serve, I am at his disposal. That's why he was so mightily used by God. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, tell you what, because we're in Israel, let's give away a Tree of Life version of the Messianic Bible. What's the date? The 22nd of May, which means probably in a week our shipment will be in. There are just a few Messianic ministries in America that are getting these hot off the press, and ours is one of them, as you know. So it's a $30 Bible hardcover, the first team translation that's been done like this, with Messianic Jewish and Christian scholars working together. So a complete translation of the Bible, Old and New Testaments together, with Messianic sensitivities. So I don't have to sell it to you. I'm giving it away. All right, guys, just give me a number. What caller number?
12.
Call number 12. All right. Dwight is going to like that. Sorry, Dwight, but we got some tour folks here, and we let him make the decision. Caller number 12, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Caller number 12 will send it out to you. One of the scholars I was talking to yesterday was involved in the translation of the book of Genesis. Another top Hebrew scholar, professor at Denver Theological Seminary, went through a lot of the Old Testament and oversaw the language and the feel of it. And I always like to see people try to time it and then call And Dwight, just give me a heads up or somebody wave at me when we got a winner here. 866-34-TRUTH. We come back. I'm going to answer a question from our tour group here. And got some interesting we've got a winner, though. Thanks, folks. We've got a winner. Got some interesting quotes from a pastor, was it in Ireland, who's spoken out against Islam, and he's now being investigated for hate speech. There's even the possibility that he'll be charged with a crime. So we'll get your feedback on that. Think this guy is guilty? 866-34-TRUTH. We will be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
מן השעות והשניות והקולות באוזניות מן הכוכב על המגדל
ומן הרוח לצידו והחבר Hebrews singing. Here we are in the land of Israel. I am at the Galilee Experience, which is a Messianic Jewish outreach center. They do lots of other neat things and just the shop where you can come in. And I'm sitting looking at things that they've just – we're not behind walls, so I'm just looking at folks walking in here, coming around into the Galilee Experience. There's a Messianic Jewish group that's playing a concert right on the Sea of Galilee. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. We've got some – folks from our tour group that are here as well, sitting in on the broadcast, 866-348-7884. Yeah, we have had a winner for several minutes now for the Tree of Life Messianic version of the Bible, but appreciate your interest. Remember, if you become a Torchbearer, one of our monthly supporters, if you're able to put aside a dollar a day per month, so $30 per month or more, if you're able to stand with us and want to participate in the work that we're doing in Israel and literally around the world and throughout America, then our thank you gift this month, we've never done this before, but we haven't had this Bible available to us. My thank you gift when you become a Torchbearer is to send you a Tree of Life version of the Bible. So the first translation of its kind from beginning to end of the Bible, complete fresh translation from the Hebrew, Greek, Aramaic, and with Messianic sensitivities. All right, I want to play some clips for you, and I want to get your feedback, all right? We've got three clips, so Joey, we'll start with 17. This is a pastor in Belfast, Northern Ireland, Senior Pastor James McConnell, Whitehall Tabernacle Metropolitan Church, and I want your honest feeling listening to this. Not whether this is conducive for evangelism or not, but do you feel that speech like this should be allowed by law? Or if it was a Muslim saying these things about Christianity or Judaism or other groups, that we consider it hate speech or dangerous? Is it provoking opposition? 866-34-TRUTH. Let me know what you think. I want to play a few of these clips. Is this hate speech? There's the possibility that he will be prosecuted for a crime in the UK or here, Belfast, Northern Ireland specifically. So clip number 17.
Today we see powerful evidence that more and more Muslims are putting the quorums, hatred of Christians and Jews alike, into practice. Now, people say there are good Muslims in Britain. That may be so. But I don't trust them.
All right. He says there may be good Muslims in Britain. Maybe so, but I don't trust them. How far does he go in what he has to say? Next clip, number 18, he continues speaking against Muslims. Is this fair? Is this just honest warning and raising concerns and issues, or is this really hateful speech? Clip number 18.
15 years ago, Britain was concerned of IRA sales. right throughout the nation. They done a deal with the IRA because they were frightened of being bombed. Today, a new evil has arisen. There are cells of Muslims right throughout Britain.
All right, so he's saying a few years back they were considered concerned with the Irish Republic Army, and there were cells of the Irish Republic Army, and they committed crimes against the people. They attacked and killed people, and they were feared, rightly so. He said, well, now we have cells, we have Muslim cells throughout the country, and these are radical Muslims who want to kill us. Now he's warning about that. And one more clip, clip number 18, again, Senior Pastor James McConnell speaking in Belfast, Northern Ireland.
Islam is satanic. Islam is a doctrine spawned in hell.
All right. Islam is satanic. Islam is a doctrine spawned in hell. Now, do all Christians believe that, or genuine followers of Jesus, if it's a false religion, if it has 1.5 billion people under its power? If it claims that the Bible is not truly the word of God, if it denies the deity of Jesus, if it denies his death on the cross and therefore his resurrection with that, and says that it is the only true faith, well, is it satanic and spawned in hell? Is there anything wrong with saying that? 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to grab one call now, and then I will get some more on the other side of the break. And as always, my reminder for our friends in WMCA and WAVA, since our programming changed a couple months back, to continue listening, just go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and just click on the banner to continue listening on the Line of Fire. You can do it on your cell phone, your tablet, or your PC. Let's start in Richmond, Virginia. Taylor, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, sir.
Yes, sir. Well, my philosophy on this, back in 2006, I went to Israel by myself, okay? And one of the first people I met was a guy named David, and he was a Muslim, okay? Now, I drank tea with this gentleman, and I sat in a shot with him and his family. They never caused me any harm. Now, you know, I'm not going to say that they're led by Satan or Lucifer or whoever. But I believe that Islam is a peaceful religion. I believe it's radicalized by some people that don't have, a straight narrative of what they're supposed to be following or doing. I think Islam comes from the point of people not being well educated, you know, in our not schooled, you know, properly. But
Got it. So in your view, the vast majority of Muslims and the Muslims who are true to their faith are peace-loving, and they cared for you as an individual, and many of us may have them as neighbors and co-workers, depending on where we live in the world. And the radical groups, the Al-Qaedas, the Taliban, and groups like that, they would not be true Muslims or a true reflection. Hey, Taylor, thanks for getting us started and weighing in. If you're on hold, I will get to your call shortly. I wrote an article, Why a Christian Al-Qaeda Doesn't Exist. You can read it by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article. And friends, as we meet folks in Israel, we're always blessed to hear the impact that our materials had as we were with Israel College of the Bible. One of the main outreaches they do is on internet, and they've taken a lot of my material from the 5 volumes, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, and then broken them down into more bite-sized pieces with our permission, the permission of the publisher, translate them into Hebrew and use them to reach out all through Israel and every Hebrew speaker that would get on. Would you partner with us, friends, as you stand together? You're really, literally holding our hands up and helping us reach a whole lot more people by being a Torchbearer monthly supporter. And again, our thank you gift as you stand with us is Tree of Life version of the Bible, plus all of the other benefits you get being a Torchbearer. So call now to stand with us, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Again, 1-800-278-9978. Or go to my website, askdrbrown.org.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, you've heard that sound before, but it's awfully special now because I hear a lot of music like that in Israel as we are broadcasting live from the Sea of Galilee at the Galilee Experience. If you're ever in Israel and near the Sea of Galilee, make sure you come by, visit the Galilee Experience. It is owned by Messianic Jewish believers. 866-34-TRUTH. Pastor McConnell in Belfast, as his comments have drawn a lot of criticism, and now it's being investigated to see if he has committed a crime of hate speech. He says, no way will I take back my comments. They are not getting it, namely apology, because I believe I am right in what I'm saying. And he added that he was prepared to go to prison for his faith. Now, for sure, the example of Jesus is different than the example of Muhammad, in that Jesus doesn't fight wars Muhammad did. Now, Joshua in the Bible fought wars, for example. David fought wars, but Jesus did not. He was crucified. He could have called down legions of angels to fight for him, and he did not. So his example is different, and his teaching is consistently different. There's nothing in his teaching that you could take and then apply and say, okay, we're going to go out and kill people. And yet Muhammad was involved with wars, as some of the Old Testament figures were, Joshua and David and others, Moses, etc. And in addition to that, there are instances of Muhammad beheading those that were vanquished in war. Now you have in the Old Testament some severe things done to people that were vanquished in war. Are we being unfair in criticism of Islam when you see groups that are violent? Are they literally carrying out the teachings of Muhammad and following his example as the perfect man? When Christians commit atrocities like that, without question, they are in violation of the teaching of Jesus and not following his example. So what about Islam? Your feelings on that? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Mukdad in Annapolis, Maryland. Thanks for calling the line of fire.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Brown.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, my opinion on all this, when you have status and people listen to what you have to say, you should have a mindset where you're bringing people together on a common ground rather than pointing out any sort of extremist acts on one group, whether it's Muslim, Jew, or Christian. Essentially, as a Muslim, I believe that I'm an extreme Muslim, as in extreme for peace. We greet mm-hmm. each other with peace. We're supposed to treat each other with peace. And these extremist groups that go out and kill people, those aren't Muslims. They're using their faith as an ulterior motive in believing it in the way they want to believe so they can get some sort of status in this world. You understand mm-hmm. what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask this, Mukhtar. You're raised in a Muslim home?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. So we're talking perhaps 10 or 15% of Muslims worldwide would be considered radical, you know, Taliban, these types of groups. So you say they're an aberration to what Islam really is.
You know, just to give you a quick insight, there was a saying that Bush said before he went to Iraq, if you kill one innocent person, it's like you've slayed all of humanity. And in the Quran, it says the same exact thing. God says, if you kill one innocent person, then you've slain all of humanity. And if you say,
by the way, do you know that the Quran got that from Jewish tradition? That's in the Talmud. Muhammad learned it from Jewish teachers, but it is in the Quran. You're right. That's true.
Yes, sir. And then he also says, if you save one innocent person, that means you saved all of humanity as well. So these extremist groups should not be looked at as Muslims. They should be looked at as, excuse my language, what I call a scumbag. You understand what I'm saying?
All right, well, tell you what, stay right there because I just want to ask you one more question. And the reason I put the question out was for feedback. I had a talk with a Pakistani Muslim scholar who feels the same as Mukhtar does. He feels that there is an expression of Islam which is tolerant. So stay right there, and I want to get to a few more calls on this subject. A Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, live from Israel.
God of life. Hear our cry.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire as we come your way from the Sea of Galilee in Israel on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I've just put out a question with some very strong statements from a pastor in Belfast, Ireland, speaking against Islam as being birthed by Satan and speaking of it as being very dangerous. And I've asked folks, do you believe that radical Islam, which is estimated at about 10 to 15% of Muslims worldwide, so perhaps about 250 million people, so almost the population of America, but still the smaller population of Islam as a whole, do you feel that that's a fair representation of Islam, or is that a distortion of Islam? So our first caller, who is not a Muslim, said it's a distortion. Our second caller, who is a Muslim, said it's a distortion. So Mukhtar, from Annapolis, Maryland, and again, thanks for listening and for calling in. So just so I can understand your position, one thing about your personal convictions as a Muslim, and then a larger question. But as what you describe as an extremist Muslim for peace, do you follow the five pillars of Islam in your personal life?
I mean, I was born and raised in America, so it's not like I'm in the Middle East. So as far as being a perfect Muslim, I'm not. I'm far from it.
But, do you pray five times a day?
I pray whenever I can, and I don't make time to pray five times a day, no.
Okay, and I'm not asking the challenge. I'm just trying to understand. So do you know Muslims that pray five times a day, that fast all through Ramadan, that try to make the Hajj once, you know, that give a certain amount and so on, that feel the same way you do about Islam? Because normally the ones that I hear say that, and again, I don't want to argue. I'm just trying to understand. The Muslims that I hear normally that say that Islam is a peaceful, tolerant religion, they tend not to be the ones who are as committed. The ones that seem to be the ones who are sometimes more fanatical. That's why I was asking. So do you know Muslims that again, pray five times a day and fast completely through Ramadan the way they're supposed to during the daylight hours and make the Hajj and all that, who also feel the same way that you do about peace and tolerance?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I know many, okay, many Muslims that follow the religion to a T. I have a grandmother, I have a grandfather, I have my father as well. They always have good words to tell people, never bringing people down, never bringing any faith stone. I have a friend that emailed me that told me that, you know, your father, who is a very, very, you know, he's extremely Muslim, told me that your father is one of the kindest men ever, and he's brought me to a lot of things as far as enlightening him to, like, different ways of looking at things, but not in a negative aspect like these, that 10 to 15% that you speak of.
Right. So your father then would be mortified by things like 9/11 and other things like that from what you're saying, correct?
Oh, most definitely. He's not in agreement of killing any innocent people. No,
right.
No Muslim will agree with killing innocent people for any sort of motive. You know,
And how do you feel about Sharia law?
Sharia law?
Yeah.
As far as Sharia law, it's you steal, you know, you do bad things, you pay for your mistakes. But in Islam, if you repent, then, you know, there's no punishment for it. God is always, always very forgiving in Islam.
Yeah, but, I mean, Sharia law is pretty harsh. I mean, Sharia law is limbs being chopped off and people being beheaded and, you know, Hamas is now instituting that and you know, multiple whippings. And Saudi Arabia, of course, has that. You know, women can't even drive in Saudi Arabia. But in your mind, like Saudi Arabia, that would not be true Islam either?
Saudi Arabia has a different way of doing things. I mean, I don't agree or disagree with Saudi Arabia. It's just the way that they do it. It's the way their laws are, whether or not we agree with them as a people. And, I mean, as a normal human being, I believe that people have laws for a reason. When women can't drive on their own, they have their own reason for that, as far as protection.
Like, so you don't feel it's oppressive to women, or, you know, in Afghanistan, under Taliban, the women could not get an education, and that to them was part of Islam. Or Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran speaking against any type of music or entertainment through that. Because, you know, it seems that there's a lot of what you call extremist Islam that rules whole countries, like Iran and like Saudi Arabia. You know, most of the 9/11 bombers were Saudis and things like that. But so how do you feel about Iran? Do you feel that's representative of true Islam, or do you consider that radical?
I'm going to deflect that question with just a statement just in general Islam of what Prophet Muhammad taught the Muslims. Prophet Muhammad taught the Muslims that, you know, he gave women the right to vote back 1,400 years ago. He gave women the right to own property when many people did not allow women, you know, in whatever faiths that were back in those days. Women weren't allowed to own property. There were people that looked down on giving birth to your first daughter. You know, that's in Islam, you give birth to a daughter, it's the biggest blessing to have your first child as a daughter. And a lot of faith, whether or not
and what about within the Quran, what about within the Quran, you know, that a passage that's much discussed, of course, in terms of that a husband can hit his wife if he's upset with her, and, you know, so there is violence against the women. You feel that's a misinterpretation also?
There's one statement, and it says, if she doesn't listen to you, then beat her lightly. That's what you translate it from Arabic to English. But when you translate Arabic to English, there's many, many translations to that word that they translated to the word beat in English. You know, it could be...
Right, and there are moderate Muslims, right, who argue that same thing. All right, so you're familiar with these discussions. I mean, I would have preferred a more direct answer about Iran or Saudi Arabia. But Muqtada, listen, the reason we have talk radio and people calling in is to discuss these things, and the fact that you're a Muslim listening and wanted to weigh in, I really appreciate it. And again, the one thing we do agree on is that the vast majority of Muslims in the world are not radical Muslims like the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and Hamas. The problem is, if they're 10 or 15%, that's 250 million people with a murderous ideology, which the most people that suffer are other Muslims. You know, the Shiites and the Sunnis fighting against each other in Syria or in Iraq, in countries like that. You know, Saudi Arabia versus Iran and Syria in the middle of it. So I understand it's Muslims who suffer more than any in the midst of it. But, sir, thank you so much for the call. I do appreciate it. You've heard from a Muslim firsthand, and I'm sure he speaks for many others as well. 866-34-TRUTH. By the way, do a little study on this. See if Sharia law is being implemented anywhere in America. Do a little study on it. Look into it. See if Sharia law is being implemented anywhere in America or anywhere in England. And if so, what does that law bring with it? And does it bring equality for women? And in countries where you have things like honor killings, are those exceptions to the rule, or are those in harmony with Islam? Again, just questions to ask. Let's go to Butler, New Jersey. Michael, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm a Roman Catholic, and my whole take on this issue is I don't think that pastor in Ireland should have said those words. What I think should be done is we need to get Christian leaders together, Muslim leaders together, and not speak out against each other, but speak out against the tide of secular humanism. All right, we got kids being taught anal sex in kindergarten. We got kids being taught that they could be a woman, they could be they could be a man. We don't know. So they're introducing gender confusion. We got homosexuality being promoted throughout all of society. We're dumbing down the education. We're promoting abortion and communism. So what we need to do is stop arguing amongst each other because we believe in the same God. Now my personal belief is we have a deeper revelation of who God is in that we know who Jesus Christ is, and the Muslims don't believe as we do. But we believe in the same God. So we need to come together as believers and speak out against the secular humanism that is overtaking the whole entire world. Because let me tell you something, they are trying to divide us on purpose.
Let me just jump in, Michael. I very much agree that secular humanism is a massive threat. I very much agree that the anti-God mindset, be it new atheists, be it others who want to undermine biblical values and all the things that you mentioned. I'm not quite sure where communism fits in with that, but the other things you mentioned, yeah, absolutely with you on that. And if I was in a city and I was going, let's say I had kids in school, and I was going to meet with the city council about educational material, then I would certainly, if there were Orthodox Jews there and Catholics, Protestants, and Muslims were all raising our issues, I'd raise them together. But I could not work together spiritually with Muslims because I don't believe ultimately we're worshiping the same God. Do you believe we're worshiping the same God, Muslims, Christians, Jews?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, some very interesting comments from our callers thus far. The feeling that the pastor in Belfast spoke in a wrong way. He brings division between Christians and Muslims, whereas we need each other to fight against secular humanism. Muslim calling and saying, yeah, you have radical Muslims, but they do not represent real Islam. So to say it in Christian terms, any more than the inquisitors, the people involved with the Inquisition, torturing heretics, were involved with anything that could truly be called Christian. They're aberrant. Muslims are peace-loving. A question I want to put out for Muslim listeners, how do you feel about the death penalty for conversion? Should a Muslim... Can you tell me about Muslims that pray five times a day and are devout and follow the five pillars of Islam and seek to live as God-fearing Muslims that would say, although we don't want it to happen, there should not be a penalty for someone converting? There are Muslim countries where there is the death penalty for conversion. That's not uncommon. And there are Muslim countries where if you convert, a family member could kill you and be an honor killing, and there'd be no punishment for them. So if you're a Muslim listener, do you feel that that is a right punishment or that there should be no punishment? And be curious to know if you're a religious Muslim and feel that way. I'm not asking baiting questions. I'm not trying to be silly about this. I know these are complex issues. I do believe that the example of Muhammad, because of the wars he fought in and teachings in the Quran, and there's debate about did they just apply to historical events when there were wars or do they apply at all times, dying in what's called in Sabilillahi, in the path of Allah, meaning dying as a martyr in a war, guarantees a certain spiritual inheritance, etc. Is that mainstream Islamic teaching? Is Sharia law mainstream Islamic teaching? Is Hamas in keeping with mainstream Islam in Gaza, or the Shiites in Iran, is that mainstream Islam? Do the Taliban represent mainstream Islam, or do these different groups represent extremist interpretations that are not true to the Quran? So I am curious, if you're a Muslim listener, how you feel about conversion issues. Should a Muslim be allowed to convert without any penalty? The family may reject them and things like that, but should they be allowed to convert to another religion without any penalty? How do you feel about the death penalty for conversion? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Boston. Mukhman, thank you so much for calling the Line of Fire. What's your take on all of this, sir?
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I agree with the clips you put. But besides of that, I don't say we hate Muslims. We love the Muslims so much. There is a difference between loving Muslims and loving Islam. I agree 100% with these clips for so many reasons. I grew up in a Muslim country, but I'm a Christian. And I understand the Islam very much more than most of the Americans, because I grew up beside them, living among them. I am telling you the truth that people who you describe them as doing all the Islam rules, praying, fasting, these are the people who are will be supporting all the terrorists we see. And
so you're
saying
that the very devout Muslims, the ones who pray five times a day and fast faithfully during Ramadan and make the Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca, at least once in their lifetime, and give a certain percentage of their income and really seek to live by strict Islamic practice, that those would be the ones that would agree more with the violent tactics, that would agree more with the religious wars.
Yes.
And you, you grew up in what country?
I grew up in Egypt.
Excuse me?
Egypt. I grew up in Egypt.
In Egypt. Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So even the treatment of the cops in Egypt, I mean, they are second-class citizens in Islam.
Exactly.
Yeah, and with you know tremendous hardship today. Yeah, go ahead.
And I just need to know that I have so many friends are Muslims, and what happened in Egypt is an example. When people see the true Islam through a Muslim brotherhood, they hate Islam and they hate the practice of the Muslim brother because they represent the true Islam.
I've just got to jump in because I'm short on time and I'm just trying to get to one last call. What's fascinating to me is that our State Department said there's nothing wrong with Muslim Brotherhood. They're not terrorists. And anyway, they're not radical. Like, how long can our State Department get this? I mean, all of us looking at it knew their history and knew where they came from. And then Egypt even had a bit of a rude awakening, but certainly America did. Hey, let's chat again another time, just out of time here. And Ash and Glen Cove, I know you've been... All right. Well, Ash was holding for a while, and I was just trying to be polite. Yes, yeah, so Iran releases a number of Pharrell Williams fans who were arrested in connection with a version of his hit song, Happy. They were dancing on the rooftops of Tehran, and... Or they were dancing, singing to the song, and they were arrested for it, and they have been released. Hey, this much I know, we really need to pray for Muslims because there are many Muslims who are very, very devout, and they're not blowing themselves up as suicide bombers. They're not killing people. They're devout. They're seeking. And God is revealing Jesus to many of them. We really need to pray. There's a tremendous harvest taking place among Muslims worldwide. And we often talk about that on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday because it is so closely related to Israel and the Jewish people. Wouldn't it be exciting when every time you hear a praise report on the Line of Fire to just smile and think, hey, I played a role in that. We're going to be having a dinner on Saturday night with our torchbearers, our monthly supporters that are part of our tour in Israel. So that's something we're really looking forward to, sitting down together face-to-face and sharing and interacting together. And every good thing that happens through this ministry, every life that we reach, every missionary that we send out, every Jewish person that comes to faith, every moral victory in America that we participate in, they share in the reward as torchbearers. So I encourage you to join with us today. Join our team. Hold our hands up as we are on the front lines. And this is always a team effort. I can be your voice, but you can amplify that voice greatly with your help. So a dollar a day put aside or more if you're able, $30 or more per month. Become a torchbearer, and I'll send you as my thank you gift the complete translation of the Old New Testament, the Tree of Life Messianic version of the Bible. We have the hardcovers. They'll be arriving in just about a week, and we're some of the first anywhere in the world to be receiving these. And then we send you a new message every month to give you access to our online bookstore, 15% off access to our online classes for free. Call now 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or go to my website, askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today, God is doing amazing things in the Middle East, especially among the Muslim people. Pray for laborers for the harvest. Well, talk about a thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Not only am I broadcasting live from Israel, I'm broadcasting right next to the Sea of Galilee today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Michael Brown, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday in a thoroughly Jewish location, the Sea of Galilee in Israel. Had a great full day with our tour group. Started at the ruins of Caesarea, saw Herod's old palace, saw the great amphitheater where blood would be shed, people would be killed there, gladiatorial combat would take place. We went up to Mount Carmel. We went to the Valley of Megiddo, looked out in Armageddon. And then at the end of the day, we went to a home in Safat or Safed, which is a very interesting part of Israel towards the north. And it is part of it is very, very religious and orthodox with an emphasis on Jewish mysticism. And then part of it is very new age and artsy, but there's a home there for underprivileged children, just about 15 kids. And my dear friend Scott Volk, who's helping coordinate the details of the tour, and our tour guide Tisha, they're both involved with this children's home. So about one third of kids in Israel live under the poverty line, the poverty level, if you can imagine that. And these are kids in real rough situations that right after school are brought there, get their only two hot meals of the day, and then go back in the early evening when the parents are done working. So they could not wait for us to show up, about 15 of them. And I mean, this tiny little area, played soccer for a while with them, and they had all this food prepared that folks had helped to make, and some of the girls sang and did a little concert. So it was a real sweet way to end the day. And then came over here for radio. I'm at the Galilee Experience. If you are ever in Israel by the Sea of Galilee, you've got to stop by the Galilee Experience. It is Messianic Jewish owned. I mentioned the first hour when I walked in the door, first thing I saw was a copy of the book in Hebrew, Lachshov Ba'atzmecha, to think for yourself. And it is 10 stories of Jewish believers, our testimonies. And here I'm one of the 10. There are several million copies of this in print in English and in Russian. I'm looking at the story of Batya Siegel, native-born Israeli, married to Barry Siegel. And that's not it here. Mine's in here. But these have been widely circulated. Many Jewish people have come to faith through them. But anyway, if you're ever in Israel, by the Galilee, make sure you stop by the Galilee Experience. 866-34 For Truth, 866-348-7884. I've got a few Jewish-related questions from my tour group, but just out of curiosity, it ties in with something that we spoke about the last hour, but I want to broaden my question to you a little bit. Do you believe that Jews and Christians worship the same God? Do you believe that Jews and Christians worship the same God? I understand that Judaism rejects Jesus as Messiah or Lord, Son of God. But do you believe that Jews and Christians worship the same God? Do you believe that Christians and Muslims worship the same God? Just curious to get your take on that. 866-348-7884. We talked today on the bus about the Hebrew language. And the founder of the modern Hebrew language is Eliezer ben Yehuda, a man with an amazing story. I want to tell you about that when we come back, because one person dedicated to a cause, especially in harmony with God's purposes, can really do amazing things. We will be right back.
Fire we want, for fire we bleed. Yeah.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, yes, yes. That Hebrew music means it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I always forget the music starts. I start talking. You don't hear me, but I start talking. The music's playing. It's like, oh, hang on. But we are in Israel, broadcasting live from Israel, right by the Sea of Galilee. We've got some of our tour group has come along and is sitting here listening in. In fact, I've got a couple of their questions to answer as well during the broadcast. But if you've got a Jewish-related question, Israel-related question, Hebrew-related question, Jewish tradition-related question, Messianic prophecy, that kind of thing, Thursday is the best day to take those. 866-348-7884. And before I talk to you about Eliezer Ben Yehuda, I also asked a question in the first segment in terms of the God of the Bible, the God that is worshipped by followers of Jesus. Is that the same God as the God that Jews worship? And what about Muslims? Do Muslims worship the same God as Christians? 866-34-TRUTH. I want to talk to you about Eliezer Ben Yehuda as well, the founder of the modern Hebrew language. But you may have heard about a mining disaster in Turkey. It took the lives of 301 people. So these mining disasters, they always seem to me especially rough. It's a difficult job, and then to die in that way, and who knows what they suffer along the way, and the families, and the trauma for the families. Well, the Prime Minister of Turkey has been criticized for his handling of this event. And anyway, now there is an official line. The Business Times said this, International Business Times reported a translation of some of what was being said in Turkey. Quote, while the cartel media, which have Jewish partners, and the parallel media, which are in love with Jews, and the Western media, guided by Jews, are accusing the prime minister over the Soma, that's the mining disaster, it has been revealed that the son-in-law of Alp Gürkan, the owner of the mining company that is responsible for the disaster, is a Jew! Oh, son-in-law of the owner of the mining company, according to this report, is Jewish. What does that have to do with the mining disaster? Obviously nothing. And according to this, his name is Mario Asafrana. He changed his name to Mahir. So who's responsible for the mining disaster in Turkey that took over 300 lives? It is the Jews. Yes, yes, obviously that's not the case, in case some of you are wondering. But the typical scapegoating, and it does happen in a country like Turkey. Before I go to the phones, let me grab a couple of your questions. These are from our folks at our tour guide here. What is Judaism's concept of eternal life and new covenant? How different is it from Jesus, Yeshua's teachings? Judaism believes in a future resurrection. It does not put a tremendous emphasis on it. It does say that this world is the vestibule to the world to come. So it does recognize that this world is getting you ready for the world to come. There are other Talmudic traditions that say the only difference between this world and the world to come will be the subjugation of the nations, meaning that the Jews will not be subjugated by their enemies anymore. Otherwise, it's going to be very similar to this world. But there is not a strong emphasis on eternal life. There is not the stronger emphasis is being put on this world and this life. So that would be a difference in emphasis. Both believe that this world is important and the world to come is important. But followers of Jesus, Yeshua, would put more of an emphasis on eternity and living this life in the light of eternity, whereas Judaism would put more of an emphasis on this life. And the ideal world to come for a traditional Jew would be studying Torah day and night, being free to study and learn Torah and tradition day and night. Seriously, that would be kind of a dream setting. As for New Covenant, the people who emphasized the New Covenant were the writers of the Dead Sea Scrolls, probably the Essene Jews. They believed that they were the the people of the New Covenant, and there were a lot of parallels between their teaching, New Covenant teaching there, and New Testament concepts of a New Covenant being inaugurated. A traditional Jew does not emphasize that much. To a traditional Jew, the New Covenant will be inaugurated with an end-time repentance, and all of the Torah, all the traditions, in other words, no change in anything, that will just be written on the hearts of Jews, so they will do these things automatically. So they would not say that there will be new laws. Here and there, there's some traditions that emphasize that, but primarily it does not talk about new laws. Primarily it is simply that what we have in Torah and tradition will be written on our hearts, and we'll just do it automatically. But the great emphasis, 99.9% of the emphasis, is put on Torah obedience and following the traditions, and not on the inauguration of a new covenant. It is taught, it is in Jeremiah, but it's not something that's emphasized. The emphasis would be that our hearts would be circumcised to now do everything that is required in the Sinai covenant. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to more questions and before I talk about Eliezer ben Yehuda, my question about Christians, Jews, Muslims, do we all worship the same God? Just curious to get your feedback. We'll start with Rudy in Richmond, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
You're welcome. You're welcome. How you doing?
Yes, go ahead. Need you to speak up. I can barely hear you.
Sorry about that. Either way, I believe that the Jews and Christians do worship, can you rephrase your question, the same God, right?
Yeah, same God. Uh-huh.
Okay, I believe that the Jews and the Christians, we do worship the same God, but I believe that the Muslims don't. And my reasons for that is, I believe that either way that the Jews, the Orthodox Jews, don't worship Jesus, I believe that that's separate from them, because God has a special covenant with them. And as the Gentiles or Messianic Jews, they worship Jesus, because Jesus does say, you know, no one can come through the Father except for Jesus. And that way, I believe that the Muslims, they look at Jesus as a prophet, but the Muslims look at Muhammad as their Jesus. So in that saying, Muhammad is not Jesus. So there's no way they could get through the Father, but there is supernatural ways that God can speak through the Muslim.
All right, so,
right.
All right, let me just ask this, Eric. Are you saying that a traditional Jew has his or her own covenant with God and doesn't need Jesus in order to worship God and be
saved? I believe that there will come a revelation later on, you know, as we live in the last days, that God will reveal himself to the Jewish nation, and somehow they will be alarmed that Jesus, you know, is the Messiah. And maybe, you know, even through the end of times, I've heard that some Jewish people may be deceived that when the Antichrist comes, that he might be the Messiah, but they might be, deceived. But, Jesus and God, obviously, they're the same one. So that's pretty much my answer right there. Maybe
okay.
Not might be accurate, but
I'm just asking for your feedback. All right. Appreciate that, Rudy. So perhaps another way to say it would be that as Christians worship God and as Jews worship God, we are all worshiping the God the Father, the God who reveals himself through the Old Testament in many ways, God the Father, and that Jewish people would be rejecting God the Son and not recognizing the Spirit in a personal form, but still worshiping the God of the Old Testament, just not with full revelation. Of course, the traditional Jew would say that we are deceived in what we believe in terms of Jesus. But all right, I'm just having you weigh in right now. Let's go to Eric in Boston. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I hope you're having a good time in Israel.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. My perspective is, I'm reading from Romans chapter 10, verse 2. Paul says, I bear witness that they have zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. So I think Paul, there he's speaking about unbelieving Jews, and he's speaking about our God, the one true God, that Jews do have a zeal, a love for the one true God. We worship the same God, but it's not according to knowledge. Now, for Muslims, I think that I think that maybe in some generic sense of maybe like there's one true God, there's a creator God, and maybe in that sense we sort of have the same God, but is the God of the Quran the God of the Bible? I say to that, no, absolutely not.
Got it.
And that's my perspective.
Yeah, I think you've got good reason for saying that. I do appreciate that, Eric. That's a simple question. Is the Allah of the Quran the same God as the God of the Bible? I would say certainly not. There are parallels, but there are many things that are different. One being that one of the names that Allah does not have is Father. He's never called Father. That's a pretty significant difference, wouldn't you say? 866-34-TRUTH.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That is the music of Marty Goetz. Whoever is thirsty, let him come. Michael Brown coming away live from Israel, right on the Sea of Galilee. We are at the Galilee Experience, being hosted by them tonight. Last night we were at Israel College of the Bible using their radio studio. I believe tomorrow night, back at the Galilee Experience. And then I think the King of Kings studios I'll be using next week as we come your way, God willing, live from Jerusalem. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. You've got Jewish-related questions. We've got Jewish-related answers. I just want to say this, though, about Israel. I am not enamored by Israel in terms of, oh, the Israelis, the Jews. First, I'm Jewish. Nancy's Jewish. Grew up in Jewish homes and been around Jewish people all of our lives. And we Jews are like everybody else. And Israelis are like everybody else. I was joking with folks on our tour here that New Yorkers do well in Israel because New Yorkers are pretty aggressive and New Yorkers can be rude and New Yorkers can be pushy. I remember our first trip to Israel in 1986. We were at baggage claim, and one guy reached over another lady just to grab his luggage, and he grabbed it, and she shoved him, and I thought, I guess we're in Israel. My burden for the Jewish people is not some sentimental thing or some sentimentalized thing or some picturing of Jewish people in some surreal way. At the same time, you can't be here without recognizing that God has done something impossible. You can't be here without recognizing that God has brought something almost out of nothing. You can't be here without recognizing that, you know, when we were at the prayer tower or the prayer room in Tel Aviv yesterday and the shades were down, that's the way my friend Avi likes to do it, the blinds were down, and then he pulls the blinds up and you see the city out there and you realize that it was sand dunes. 108 years ago when they started the city, it was just sand dunes. And immigrants had to come in and drain the swamps and so on. And you have this productive and lush land and prospering in so many ways and innovative. And yet, surrounded by hostile enemies, you realize, okay, the burden I have is based on God's purposes and God's promises, not on some sentimental idealism. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I talk to you about Eliezer ben Yehuda, just a simple question I have asked, namely, is the God of Christians the same as the God of Jews, the same as the God of Muslims? Let's go to Greensboro, North Carolina. Fall, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. And his name is Fail, like the Lord will never fail you.
Ah, okay. Got it. I read it wrong. It's there on my screen. Are you, tell you what, Dwight, could you just check on that call? For some reason, I'm not sure what's happening with that connection, but Dwight, just check. I'll get back to Fail in a moment, all right? But it's almost impossible for me to hear anything. Let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Ryan, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Brown. I think you're amazing. What you're doing is awesome.
And well, thank you, sir.
Thank you. And about the Muslims and worshiping the same God as Jews and Christians, I would feel they don't. I think they... Muhammad just made them up, and I just started, like, getting into religion of, like, Muslims. I'm trying to get an understanding of them. And I know that when Muhammad died, his brother and the Legion, the good guys that was following him, got into a war, and they both had a Quran. And the one who won burned the other Quran because they were different. And when the Muhammad and his army went to battle against Baal, like B-A-A-L, and they didn't even change nothing about their sanctuary. They left all the pagan gods there, and it's still standing today as we speak, like untouched. So I figured it's all made up.
Got it. Yeah, well, there's no question that there are things from the Bible and Jewish and Christian teaching that Muhammad learned and that he picked up. There are even words that would be Aramaic words, so words that would have been spoken and used by Jews or Christians, Christians speaking Syriac, Jews speaking Aramaic, their sister languages, that make their way into Quranic Arabic. So, in other words, you see where Muhammad got these things from, and then they got twisted and changed along the way. There is a debate among scholars, the name Allah, Allahu, is that the name of the moon god, who was the most popular of the polytheistic gods in what was considered the time of ignorance before Muhammad, or does it mean Al-Illah, the God? So Al-Illah, Al-Illah becomes Allah, the God. So that's debated as well. And then there are some who'd say the reason that we do have just one text of the Quran is that there were variants, just like we have different manuscripts of the Bible, but the variants were destroyed. That's why you only have one. That's certainly what critics of the Quran would say. Hey, Ryan, thanks for weighing in. We heard from Muslim or two in the first hour, got some perspective on some related questions. Let's get back to Fail in Greensboro. And, well, you sound perfect on my end now. So your perspective, please.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Brown. First of all, when we speak of Jews having the same God as believers, yes, Israel as a whole does worship the same God. But we have to keep in mind that in Romans 11, it is Paul definitely says that they have been blinded by God for the purpose of us Gentiles to be grafted in. But in eternity future, they will have their spiritual eyes open, and they will receive Jesus as their Messiah. As far as the Muslim, and I really can't go into a lot of details about the Muslim. However, either you believe in God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit being God, or either you don't. It's like being half pregnant. You cannot.
Uh-huh.
There is no in between. Either you're pregnant or you're not. So either
all right,
you
so
believe,
in that case, in your analogy, the Muslims do not believe in the same God.
They
then
do not believe in the same God as we do.
Got it. Hey, thank you for weighing in, and thank you for the analogy. I appreciate it as well. Hey, just to be perfectly clear, I do believe there will be a turning of hearts of Jewish people at the end of the age, but a person who dies, Jew or Gentile, rejecting Jesus is lost. There will not be a conversion after death. We like to entertain all kinds of possibilities, you know, but the fact is Scripture is against those possibilities. That's why we pray all the more earnestly for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Hey, don't forget, if you have not yet gotten a copy of Can You Be Gay and Christian, if you like reading the e-books, go to Amazon. They've got it on sale for 50% off, Can You Be Gay and Christian, on Amazon. Order them, tell your friends to order them. The book is actually getting more attention than I even expected, and the results, the impact on readers is exactly what I was expecting, and that's a great blessing to see. And friends, if you've been listening maybe for years, enjoying the broadcast but never sewn in, why not join us? Why not become a torchbearer, monthly supporter? Put aside $1 a day, $30 a month. My thank you gift is you join with us a copy of the Tree of Life Messianic version of the entire Bible. Go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, to stand with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's also the music of Marty Goetz, the traditional song Hava Nagila, which is Come Let Us Rejoice. Michael Brown, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, coming your way from the Thoroughly Jewish location of the Galilee Experience. This is Messianic Jewish owned. They do outreach and minister to the folks that come by here. Tonight there was a Messianic Jewish group that was performing. And we are in the midst of our Israel tour, my first ever tour that I've led or been out with the tour group. So we had a full day today, and I think tomorrow afternoon I get to do baptisms in the River Jordan. I've actually never done that. Been to Israel a good number of times, never done that, but a bunch of folks on the tour wanted to do it, so we will be doing it. Remember, there's nothing special about the River Jordan. Remember that Naaman, the Syrian general, when he was called, when God was going to heal him of his severe skin disease, Sara'at, called in Hebrew, not technically leprosy, Hansen's disease as we know it today, but severe skin disease, when he was supposed to wash in the River Jordan, his thing was, Jordan, I'd wash in better rivers than that. That's true in the natural, but that's where we'll be. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. On the bus today, we're talking about the Hebrew language, and our tour guide mentioned Eliezer Ben Yehuda. He is known as the father of the modern Hebrew language. Now, understand that Hebrew is still used, but it was called the Shon HaKodesh, the holy tongue, the holy language. It was still used in religious Jewish circles. And there were Jewish writers that would write poems in Hebrew, kind of a classical Hebrew. There were commentaries that were written in Hebrew. The language was used in an ongoing way. Prayers were prayed in Hebrew, but it was not a spoken colloquial language. In other words, children were not speaking Hebrew just as they would play with each other on the streets. Children were not using Hebrew. Hebrew was not creating new words and expressions as a living language would. All right. So it was not a living language in that respect. And Eliezer Ben Yehuda, who lived from 1858 to 1922, he felt that he began to hear more about Zionism and knew that the only way this could succeed, the vision could succeed, is with the reviving of the Hebrew language. And how do you do this? How do you revive a language that has not been a living language like this in almost 2,000 years? And if you think of it further, you only have limited Hebrew already. In other words, you have the Hebrew of the Bible and the rabbinic literature and things related to that, and that's it. So you don't have vocabulary for thousands of things that are in the new world and in new society, technology. So how in the world do you even get a language going like this? Well, he was determined to do it. And his first wife died and left behind five little children. And not long after she died, three of the children died. And he had battled with tuberculosis for much of his life, but he went on and persevered. And in fact, when his son was born, he insisted that they use no language in the home aside from Hebrew. He once rebuked his wife when she was singing a Russian lullaby to his son because he only wanted him to grow up speaking and knowing Hebrew. So he would have been the first Hebrew speaker. Now there are millions and millions of people speaking Hebrew. Even the Israeli Arabs that live here, speak Hebrew. One man with a vision, especially in harmony with God's purpose. You never know what can happen. We will be right back.
Sing it, Lord. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I wrote an article once I was here in Israel, and then it got posted WorldNet Daily last night, why Christian Al-Qaeda doesn't exist. 866-34-TRUTH, Michael Brown, coming your way live from Israel. We're right on the Sea of Galilee, Galilee Experience, Messianic Jewish owned, and hosting us tonight and tomorrow night for the radio broadcast. And I wrote this article explaining that while Christianity has had aberrations and aberrant groups to this day who are violent, who are racist, who are hateful, who engage in atrocities, they do it in complete repudiation of the teaching example of Jesus, whereas radical Muslims, violent Muslims, and there's so many groups like this around the world and practicing Sharia law with all of its draconian punishments and so on, that they can look to Muhammad and they can look to the Quran for justification. If you want to read the article and the points that I make explaining this and laying this out, again, I recognize you have fringe extreme Christian groups. I recognize we've had horrible times of church history and the Inquisitions and Crusades and things like that. And I recognize that you do have some groups today engaging in violent warfare, but that is not in keeping with the teaching of Jesus, the example of Jesus. However, radical and violent Islam can look to the example of Muhammad and his wars and his beheading people, and can look to the violent teachings of the Quran, which do not say they were just for one time and place, and can apply these things. To read the article, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article. We talked about that in the first hour. I had Christians call in and say, no, true Islam is tolerant. I had Muslim call in and say, absolutely, true Islam is tolerant. And these groups do not represent true Islam. When I asked about Iran, there was kind of a no comment to that. And Saudi Arabia, somewhat of a no comment to that. But I asked the question this hour, do Christians, Jews, Muslims worship the same God? According to Professor Abraham, Irish-born scholar in philosophical theology, serves as the Albert Cook Outler Professor of Wesley Studies at Southern Methodist University's Perkins School of Theology. According to him, the identity of God in Christianity and Islam is not just a hot ecclesiastical and political issue, it's also a critical theological and missiological issue. Can we assume that we are speaking of the same God when we speak to Muslims of the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ? In sharing the gospel with Muslims, should we assume that we believe in the same God, or should we tacitly seek to wean them away from belief in Allah? Professor Abraham believes Christians and Muslims find common ground in that both identify God as the one and only creator of the world, who is all good, all powerful, and worthy of worship and obedience. Now, could it be that there's some of what he's saying is true, that we both believe in a creator of the universe who is good and merciful and holy, and yet we would say that Muslims have a distorted view of who that creator is, and in that do not see him and know him as Father, and in that do not see him and know him as Redeemer the way we would through Jesus? Or would you just say, no, entirely different God? What about Jews? Do Jews and Christians worship the same God? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Laurel in Portland, Maine. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I've been listening, and I'm actually really glad that you're asking this question today, because I personally, as a Christian, still have confusion about some of these things. I do think that the Muslims worship a totally different God than Christians. I've read the Quran, and I'm certainly no scholar, but that God does not have the same character as our God.
In what way? What jumps out at you in terms of you're reading the Quran that would seem different about Allah, the God of the Muslims, the God of the Quran, and the God of the Bible? What things strike you as differences, if you remember?
I think he's hateful. I don't see the mercy of the Christian and Jewish God of the Old Testament, actually. Where, I mean, most people say, well, you know, God of Christianity in the Old Testament, he's full of wrath. Well, that really was to protect the tribes of Israel and to purify. But with Allah, it just kill them because they don't agree with Allah. They're
so
not
kill the unbelievers as opposed to a specific purpose in God having Israel destroy the Canaanites and things like that. So in your mind, two different gods. What about Jews? Do you believe Jews and Christians worship the same God?
This is where my confusion is, Dr. Brown. And I mean, I've been a Christian a long time, and I wish you would do a whole thing on this, this very topic, because I happen to know a lot of Jewish people, and we do talk about Jesus a lot. And I've read the Old Testament, but Jesus said, if you have seen me, you have seen the Father.
Right.
It's a pretty mind-blowing thing to say. And Jesus, it comes down to the Trinity, which I think is difficult for anyone to understand,
right.
quite frankly.
Right, so obviously, traditional Jew does not believe in God's triunity. They believe that a Gentile can believe in triunity, and it's not idolatry, but for a Jew to believe it would be idolatry. Some say it's idolatry for anyone, but normally they would say for a Jew to believe it is idolatry. For a Gentile, they could have some type of belief in triunity and still be monotheists. So they would look at it in a sense as if we were worshiping a different God. But if you look at it in this way, that we both agree that the God of the Old Testament, the God of the Hebrew Scriptures, is the one true God. We
yes.
both agree with that.
Yes.
And we are praying to the one who delivered Israel out of Egypt. We are praying
yes.
to the one who promised that he'd bring a Messiah into the world. In that sense, we are all praying to the same God. I would say that we have an accurate and more full understanding of who he is, complex in his unity, and revealed fully through his Son, so that we have a more full understanding of who the God of the Old Testament, the God of the Scriptures is. A traditional Jew would say that we have a distorted view of who he is. To the extent that we would put the emphasis on worshiping Jesus, obviously
right.
they would say that's idolatry, that's making a man into a god or a god into a man, etc. But that being said, as you read the Hebrew prayer book, you could easily pray many of the prayers, except the prayers for a Redeemer to come. You'd know that he's already come and brought redemption,
right.
he's already come and brought forgiveness, and so on and so forth. So there would be a different perspective that we would have in praying these prayers and looking at these different subjects. But that being said, when I'm talking to a traditional Jew about God, even
mm-hmm.
though we have profound differences as to who Jesus is, and
mm-hmm.
we have profound differences about what I would refer to as his complex unity, for sure, we're still talking about the same God. We're still talking about the God of our fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We're still talking about the God of the Exodus. We're still talking about the God of the Hebrew Scriptures. We're
yes.
still talking about the God who promised to send the Messiah into the world. So in that sense, I would say that we are attempting to worship the same God and each having a different understanding of who he really is. Obviously,
okay.
from what Jesus made plain, that if we reject him, then we're not actually worshiping the one true God. And the traditional Jew would say the same thing to me by embracing Jesus.
Yes.
And I'm not rightly worshiping the one true God. But I was talking one time to a rabbi,
mm-hmm.
and I asked the rabbi, how do you describe my spirituality? And he said to me, well, since Adam and Eve, since they sinned, everything has been a mixture. So there's part of your spirituality which is true, and there's part of your spirituality which is false. That there's
right.
part of your worship that is right, and part that is wrong. And obviously the wrong to him would be very wrong. And he said to me, how do I describe his spirituality? And he was a religious man. And I said to him, you are standing at the door knocking. You can hear the voice on the other side calling you in, but you can't get inside. He was a little offended by that, but of course that's how I see it, so near and yet so far. So in that sense, attempting to worship the same God, when you add Islam in, yes, in the sense that we believe there's one God who created the entire universe and one God that will stand before us one day as judge, but for sure the characteristics of the God of the Quran are very different than the characteristics of the God of the Bible. There is some similarities, and there are things that Muhammad learned from Jews and Christians that make their way into the Quran, and he is called the Rahman al-Rahim, the merciful and compassionate, and yet, absolutely, there are profound differences in terms of the God of the Quran and the God of Scripture, and I don't think we should have any problem saying that. We might say that we're all attempting to worship the God who created the universe, but who he really is differently described in Scripture and Quran. By the way, if you're a Muslim and you believe that the Quran describes the identical God that the Scriptures describe, it'd be interesting to hear from you. 866-34-TRUTH. And I've got a question from one of our tour group folks. I'll answer that. Other side of the break.
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is interesting. I asked a question earlier this hour, just getting some listener feedback. Do Jews, Christians, Muslims worship the same God? And a survey done by Baylor University 2011 asked the larger question, do all religions around the world worship the same God? And for Americans, the answer to this question depends on political ideology, as we come your way live from Israel. So according to these figures, only about 1 in 4, 27.5%, 1 in 4 conservatives think that all religions worship the same God. Almost half of moderates, 47.7%, and of liberals, 47.3%, feel the same way, according to the new results from the Baylor Religion Survey. So the more moderate, the less committed to the full authority of their religion, they think we all worship the same God. It's kind of like you blend everything together, it loses its distinctive taste. When you really hold to the thing fully and completely, then you're going to say, of course, we worship different gods. Only 15.9% believe that all religions are true. That's among conservatives. But liberals, about half, 45.9%, feel that all religions are true. So this is completely consistent with these different perspectives. Also, we will not be around the Pope when he comes to Israel. I understand things just get shut down completely when the Pope is in certain areas. So we will not be where he is whenever he is in Israel in these coming days. But he will be visiting the Palestinian Authority. And Palestinian Authority has commissioned an art exhibit that includes works of art portraying Palestinians as Jesus. The exhibit consists of visual displays merging classical paintings of biblical scenes with photos of Palestinians and have been designed by the Palestinian Museum at the request of the Presidential Higher Commission Committee for Church Affairs. If you want to see that, you'll find this very interesting. Go to PalWatch, P-A-L-W-A-T-H, PalWatch.org. All right, before I go back to the phones, here's a question from Michael Brockton, Massachusetts, but actually sitting right next to me, a part of our tour group that came over for the radio broadcast, just about a 10-minute walk from our hotel. And by the way, also part of an exciting winning team today. We played with these underprivileged kids that are part of a children's home that gets some extra support after school and before going home with their very, very poor families and difficult living conditions. And we played a little soccer in this tiny, tiny little field. In fact, you'll be pleased to know that I played goal for a little while. I was the goalie, and my goals against average was 0.00. I did not give up a single goal, nor did I have a single save. There was not a lot of activity when I was there. But what our team won, whatever, we came up with some score, but we definitely won. So Michael's question, in Romans 10:3, Paul speaking of his Jewish people being ignorant of God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own. What caused this? Was it misunderstanding the nature of the law of Moses, Pharisaical religion? Really, it would be a logical response to the law of Moses in that you would say, okay, here are these laws. If I keep these laws, then I am accepted and blessed by God. so I have to try harder to keep them. And then to be even more zealous, the Pharisees did have a tradition in Hebrew, it's asusiag l'Torah, make a fence for the Torah, meaning if the speed limit is 60 miles an hour, we'll make the speed limit 45 miles an hour to make sure nobody goes too fast. So in your zeal to keep the law and with a legal orientation, yes, there'd be prayer, there'd be asking for God's mercy, but the concept, the man who does these things will live by them, which we have in Leviticus 18, that it would be very natural, rather than learning some of the right lessons from the law, namely that we all fall short, that we are condemned by our own best efforts and recognize our need for a Savior, that lesson was not learned, and rather there was an emphasis put on self-effort. Christians can do that as well. It's not that hard to get into a self-effort mentality, and that, in fact, is what happened. Yes, there was looking to God for mercy and help, but the concept, if we try harder and keep the law even more, then God will somehow accept us. And of course, there is a terrible trap with that, because our own righteousness always does fall short. I just posted this on Facebook a little while ago, a quote from Richard Wurmbrand, the most famous tortured prisoner, tortured Christian of the last century, but a committed Jewish believer. He and his wife Sabina, Jewish believers. Richard Wurmbrand said, "A great part of my family was murdered. It was in my own house that their murderer was converted. It was also the most suitable place. So in communist prisons, the idea of a Christian mission to the communist was born." You never know. By the way, Matt, Scott didn't play. Scott didn't play in the game, but he was busy being a people person, like always. But you never know how history can be turned in the most unexpected ways. You never know how here Richard Wurmbrand's cell in Romanian prison, where he suffered in solitary confinement for 3 years, that became a room where Bibles were kept to be distributed and given out to Romanians. Who would have ever scripted something like that? I believe if what I read is accurate, that Voltaire's home, of course, a great skeptic and mocker of the faith in many ways, that ended up being used for Bible distribution in subsequent generations. If what I read is accurate there, the Wurmbrand story, I know for a fact, because I remember reading it as the thing unfolded, and he was there to witness this transformation as well. But you never really... Matt, hang on, I got to correct this here. I'm getting savage. Matt, we were playing with the kids. It was not the adults against the kids. Our victory was a victory for the kids. In fact, our team ended up with only two adults and all the other adults on the other side. So just to set the record straight here, I cannot allow this injustice to be portrayed here. But in all seriousness, friends, you don't know how God will turn things around. Who would have believed what we see, what we live with in the midst of Israel today and the turning around of things? Who would ever believe that Israel would be strong enough that its enemies are able to say that Israel is the Goliath and they're just the poor little David? Who would have believed that turnarounds like this could happen? And they've happened in our lifetime. And we pray for the salvation of Muslim and Jew alike, for the salvation of all the peoples of the Middle East, believing that there are great things that God has in store. Study the end of the book of Isaiah and see what it speaks of there in terms of a glorious future. Friends, just want to remind you that as you stand with us, as you join our team as a torchbearer, a monthly supporter, with your gift of $30 or more per month, so put aside a dollar a day per more if you're able to, God will bless you as you partner with us. I want to send you as my thank you gift a free copy of the Tree of Life Messianic version of the Bible. We've gotten a lot of requests for it. A lot of people have ordered them now, and we want to send this out as a thank you gift, the first ever Messianic Jewish translation of its kind from the original Hebrew, Greek, and Aramaic by a team of scholars. My thank you gift when you join us. Call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, there is one true God and one true God alone. He has made himself known to us through his Son, Jesus the Messiah.